Welcome. It's an honor to address you today. Here we are, a day away from the fourth anniversary of September 11, which is the most important event of this new century. A murderous tragedy, but nonetheless the most important of this new century. One reason I'm here is that Portland, Oregon is a very attractive city to visit. And my dear wife there, Pat, hadn't been to Portland, Oregon. So this made it possible. In a prior life, I vacationed twice at Yahats on the Oregon coast, and that is truly gorgeous. And I want to thank David Morrison, number one, for making this possible. David's tireless entrepreneurship and financial accountability has made this happen. In addition, I thank the 9/11 activist community for making this possible. We must thank the Portland Central Library and many of its long-suffering taxpayers, probably, for opening this venue to us. And then finally, of course, I must thank you for attending and for your assumption of the burden of citizenship. I think many Americans see it as all benefits and no costs. But the costs are before us. Many Americans, probably a majority, are in denial. They won't open the closet door for fear of what they will find, and I can tell you that's true in my own family. They want to ignore this, yet it's gnawing at the underbelly of America. The 9/11 is the be-all, end-all politically, and until we bring the perpetrators to justice, and through that effort uncover more of the truth, it will go on. The nightmare in this muted form will go on. There were alternative venues attempted for our event today, one of which was the University Club. Somehow they decided in the end not to host the event. Pacific University was approached. And lo and behold, establishment venues wanted no part of it. I'm shocked, yes, shocked that the establishment won't entertain non-official views of what happened on 9/11. Now, each of us, of course, has our own personal connection to 9/11. Mine is not truly intimate in the sense that I'm not a New Yorker, haven't lost a dear one in the events of 9/11. However, I was in Washington, D.C. That morning, and I was in the Department of Labor, which is kind of a Romanian Ceausescu-type faceless bureaucratic building, two blocks from the Capitol on Constitution Avenue. And that morning, I got an email from my son in Kansas City, and he said, "Are you getting out of the building?" And I said, "What is he talking about?" So I went down the to a neighbor's office, and she had a television. That's what I knew I was headed for. And I looked at that a tower burning, and I said, the first thing out of my mouth is, "That building will not fall." And then I spent the rest of my morning trying to get out of Washington, D.C. into my apartment in Alexandria, Virginia. And so I didn't see all the immediate coverage that followed. But I said, gee, how wrong I was. You know, I'm no structural engineer. And I'm still accused of that. And it's true. I'm not a structural engineer. But most structural engineers have said nothing but stupid things about the World Trade Center destruction. Okay, so I put it on the back burner. I spent my next 16 months watching the Bush administration go from kind of neutral, in my opinion, to doing more and more negative things. And they didn't really listen to me, even though I'm advising the Secretary of Labor on economic matters, etc. Then when I left, I knew the whole invasion coming up of Iraq was a big lie. And I started asking myself, I had some time on my hands, what else would they lie about? Hey, this is the key, of course, is 9/11. And that sent me off on this trail of research on 9/11. And then the channels I usually write in were exceeded. I started swimming on June 9th in a channel I'm not accustomed to when some of the media picked up on my column because I was a Bush appointee. A column I did on LouRockwell.com on June 9th. And then there were dozens of radio interviews, etc. The 9/11 Truth Movement thought this was a good thing, that I'd step forward. And I think it is a good thing. It's a good thing that David Ray Griffin, the author of the new Pearl Harbor and the 9/11 Report Omissions and Distortions, recently had an interview published in the LA Times. So here and there, little holes are opening in the dike, in the levee, where the complicit news network, corporate mainstream media, have sealed off alternative views of 9/11, but it's there. And we have this very rich body of research and knowledge that's been incredibly advanced over the 4 years. And truth matters. It matters powerfully, and I'm very optimistic that truth will out and justice will follow. Now, I want to spend some significant time here in laying out what I think is important. Much of this will be redundant, but I can't help that. I think the first duty of a scientist, has been said, is to point out the obvious. And we should be crystal clear about what theories we're entertaining and hypotheses, what the evidence is on behalf of them. Take a scientific view and not an ad hominem attacking and the like, which is part of the human enterprise, but we've got to put the science first. And this is crucial because physical impossibility is the number one problem for the official account. We can disprove the official account in all four events. And I'm going to give you the keys to why we can disprove it. We could prove it up before a jury right today. If I had law enforcement powers, I'd begin charging criminals. Juries would indict them because I got enough already. And when you do have law enforcement powers, the way you break conspiracies wide open, of course, is not only can you subpoena people, conduct harsh investigations or queries, questioning, but you have the sanction of perjury, you have quite a bit of law enforcement resources that you can put in the field, and you have incentives to offer co-conspirators, which often leads, and people, Americans have been brainwashed that the conspiracies are non-existent or extremely rare, which is stupid and silly. Conspiracies are just common as dirt in criminal activity. One out of every four criminal federal prosecutions involve a conspiracy charge. In other words, anything of any scale involves criminal conspiracy, any illegal enterprise. Okay, so, bare facts. One, there was a homicide. These are uncontested propositions. Two, there was a conspiracy, because it was multi-person. Three, one arrest, no conviction so far. We had Massawi, who even the feds don't accuse of being a participant in 9/11. You know, just another dumbbell, ragtag loser who's incapable of the crimes that they accuse him of, just like all the other 19, quote, hijackers, unquote. Just stupid. Of course, the most we only have three theories of 9/11. One is ONI, O-N-I-E, Osama and 19 Islamic extremists. That's the official story. Then we have LIHOP, let it happen on purpose, which is criminal negligence on the part of the U.S. government, right? Ignoring all, yeah, it was failures of various kinds, you know, incompetence, da-da-da. No, 9/11 was a success. It was a huge success, right? That's the MIHOP, make it happen on purpose. It's the only way it can have happened. It's the only theory consistent with all the facts, which I think I'm going to hit many of the high points here to prove. So 9/11 is a success. It wasn't a failure. It got the PNAC deal going, the Project for the New American Century, which said that in the absence of a new Pearl Harbor, we wouldn't be able to pursue the military budgets necessary for the world domination project, right? Now, in response to the events of 9/11, the two-hour murderous show, since the American attention span, Hollywood knows it's about 120 minutes, if it's a good show, maybe 150 minutes, right? Didn't use them, it just was war. I can sniff Osama in this, right? George Tenet says, I feel it. Oh, this is, they got all the earmarks of Osama. I don't have any proof. No real evidence, but it just feels like. And it's a slam dunk, of course, and la la la. You know, it's just infantile. The kind of caliber of people in the government. Sorry to, you know, smear a whole group, but just poor, intellectually backward. Even the ones who are articulate, a la Mr. Rumsfeld, playing his word games. Okay. Now, here's a fourth fact that I want to go back to, and that is 9/11 was a terrorist event. It was a terror event. That is, it's bent on publicity. It's bent on manipulating public opinion. So it's a political event of murderous proportions, of course. Now, instead of, what would be the alternative to, this is war, this means war. This is the, as Bush wrote in his alleged diary, that would not be fun to read if it existed. This is the new Pearl Harbor, says our most insightful leader. You know, it's just ludicrous what they ask you to believe, but this is America, after all. Okay. Mark Halperin, an editorial contributor to the Wall Street Journal editorial page yesterday, had a comment that the alternative has been to judicialize our response to Muslim terrorism. That's what we've been doing for decades, supposedly. We're the innocent victims. This is the kind of, so that's the alternative to war would be criminal methods. Find the perpetrators, prove it up, prosecute, and you would triple check everything. And if we do that, and a lot of researchers have contributed toward this investigation and made great advances, well, we have enough today to prove it up in court that it was an inside job. And we can name names. I've got the list. I include, for example, the CEOs of American Airlines and United. They're part of it, folks. You would include Thomas Kane, Lee Hamilton, and Philip Zelikow because they're accessories after the fact. They're the cover-up. In other words, there are hundreds of indictments to be made by the relevant grand jury. And we can prove it up now before we even start breaking down the conspiracy by having people give it up. Okay. The way you prove it in court, there are criminal prosecutions every business day in court. Do the prosecutors know everything exactly about how the crime was committed? No, that's not their job. Their job is to lay out such facts where the defense has not been able to undermine them. You lay out the facts, and the facts have no other reasonable explanation than the accused did it. That's how you do it. We're always going to have things we don't understand. It's a complex crime. But we've got plenty to lay out the facts such that many of the accused would be found guilty. Now, let's look at a motive for a minute. In criminal prosecutions, you've got to have motive, means, and opportunity. Who did it is a question in a criminal investigation. Well, there are only two general classes of candidate. One is elements of the United States government. The other is some non-governmental organization, an NGO. Okay? Well, does the United States government or these elements have motive? Yeah, money, power, lust, you know, control. Yeah, plenty of motive. And I've repeated this probably a couple dozen times in my life, but the man who puts it best, to my mind, is the ex-CIA analyst Ray McGovern, who says, oil, no, O-I-L, pardon me, I jumped ahead of myself, O-I-L, he says, but that's the motive. O is for oil, I is for Israel, L is for logistics. Logistics for world domination. Actually, they seek intergalactic domination. There's no, you know, it's hard to make fun of these guys because it's just so over the top. And there's no secret about this in terms of their documents, right? It's no different than other tyrants throughout history who wrote it down and used the slogans, the Karl Rove's and Karen Hughes's and not spinmeisters of the world to pursue their end. Okay, now, but there are other motives. One of you said initially money. Larry Silverstein comes to mind for some reason. The 99-year leaseholder, 6 weeks preceding 9/11, and he collected somewhat $850 million on WT-7's collapse, implosion, controlled demolition. And about $3 billion was the courts for each tower because they were separate events. Yeah. So we have plenty of motive around. You have political friends named Halliburton, right, on and on. You know, these budgets are immense. You have domestic control improved by the Patriot Act, which I guess it was submitted to Congress, within a week? Very rapid drafting of this legislation. And then, according to Congressman Ron Paul, it wasn't available to read before you have your staff read it before the votes were taken. So, of course, aided by a mysterious anthrax attack, only available from Fort Detrick, Maryland, and only a few, you know, less than 100 people could have done this. But the FBI somehow couldn't come up with a real anybody to arrest. Wow, man. The competence of the FBI being challenged. Okay, now, would Osama bin Laden and the alleged shadowy Al-Qaeda, et cetera, have motive? Yeah. The best of enemies, right? Necessary enemies. You know, I do something to you, you do something to me, and we're, well, that's a little, maybe a little too flippant, but if these terrorists, supposing they were of Muslim origin, wanted to do maximum damage, they didn't do a very good job on 9/11, they did a pretty good job, but what would you do if you were flying into these buildings? Oh, first of all, I'd take a 747, something bigger. I'd go lower into the towers to maximize the loss of life. I wouldn't go into the west wing of the Pentagon. I'd go into the east, hope to get Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, and the whole bunch, you know. You know, give me some, you know, what's going on here, you know. And this supposed 757 plane at the Pentagon did some super stunt flying. So this pilot, Hani Hanjour, who couldn't fly at all, according to multiple airplane instructors, Could have chosen to slide it in anywhere, especially since, you know, he didn't hit the, no engine hit the lawn, and he slipped into a 20-foot hole. Later, after the facade collapsed, it was 65 feet wide. But to swallow a plane intact, a 757, whose wingspan is 125 feet, the plane supposedly went in at a 45-degree angle, according to the track, through rings E, D, and C. It would have taken 173 feet because of the angle, a 45-degree angle, more or less. So it's just an order of magnitude away. There's no way a Boeing 757 went in there. Furthermore, I'm going to argue, and I can prove it up, no Boeing 767 went into either tower. Just physically impossible. Okay, I'll get there. That's a teaser. Okay, now, one thing that a lot of people, because we're growing, brought up under high school civics 101, we're so good. We're so good. We choose our leaders, and we're the best people in the world. We're the shining city on the hill. Da, 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 da. There are bad people who acquired power in other governments around the world at various times in history, but not here. Bad people, we elect these people. They have to respond to our needs. Da, da, da. That's what's going on here, a lot of this inability to confront the truth. Americans, we're so good. Well, Tarpley's book, Webster G. Tarpley, I recommend, has a new book called 9/11 Synthetic Terror. The best thing about this book to me is to really bring forward so much of the skullduggery. It exposes how terror movements and pretext to war plus the antidote are all brewed up in the same vat. I mean, he goes over, he's a real counterterrorism expert. And my, well, we had Hitler. Let's go with Hitler, right? That's the worst name you can use, apparently, according to George Herbert Walker Bush. He's worse than Hitler. Well, let's look at Hitler. Hitler had the Reichstag fire. Okay, that was pretty cool. Yeah, that got him tyrannical powers within weeks. But here's the one I didn't know about. I didn't know about a lot of these, but I thought this was almost amusing. On the eve of Hitler's invasion of Poland on September 1, 1939, he drummed up this farce. He got some prisoners, marched them to a radio station, a German radio station near the Polish line, had them dressed up in Polish military uniforms, machine gunned them to death, kind of arranged them in a particular way, had a German speaking Polish broadcast in Polish over the radio station, denouncing Germany and defying them to do anything about it, etc. You know, just farcical. And then and Hitler had to worry enough about public opinion. You know, the majority of the German public was not in favor of launching a war, in, which would quickly spread. But he pulled off this pretext. And there's just been hundreds of these things, these stunts pulled. Now, 9/11 was incredibly audacious, you know, pulling this thing off. Just huge. But I think my thought on that is after the Oklahoma City bombing, they got away with that without hardly a quiver out of the American public or intellectual community. They just, you just, it's hubris, you know, you just, it just gets bigger and bigger. And that's one of the reasons, of course, truth and justice is needed here. Number one, of course, we need the justice on behalf of the victims and their survivors. And, I mean, it goes all the way to the peace of the world. So justice is necessary there. But we also need it because of deterrence, deterring future events by isolating the perpetrators, by getting their hands off the levers of power. And also, of course, creating a general lesson and instituting the wider reforms that this would trigger. And then finally, the truth is that's why I went into academia in the first place. I'm terribly old-fashioned. I'm very pre-9/11, thinking the truth is powerfully important. Okay. While I'm on this farcical nature of these hoaxes, the put-up jobs that they are, how many of you have seen Wag the Dog, the 1998 movie? Man, that's one of the best things Hollywood's ever done in current context, right? There is some political truth. And I want to give you a little dialogue between Robert De Niro's character and Dustin Hoffman. One of them says, "We're going to have a war. We're going to have the appearance of a war. But they would find out. Who would find out? The American people? Yeah. Who's going to tell them?" Well, in the Bush administration, I saw a lot of this contempt for the memory of the American public, because I'd say, you know, that'll work for today, but what are you going to do next month? People won't remember it. Just a contempt for the American people. Okay, well, here's a little slice more from Wag the Dog. What did they find out about the Gulf War? One shot. One bomb falling through the roof. A building could have been made of Legos. The building could have been made of Legos, what you see on CNN, right? And that's what CNN is the complicit news network. My wife here on Thursday saw one of the runners under the running at the bottom of the TV screen watching CNN. Secretary Donald Rumsfeld says, CNN is the most trusted news network. And CNN depends on who do you turn to in a disaster? CNN. A lot of us do, right? Because they have access. Now, the opportunity, how is this going to be cracked open ultimately? I think there are two ways, and I'm very optimistic one of them will happen. The first is far less probable, is that somebody in law enforcement will prosecute. Best candidate, from a point of view of position, would be the State Attorney General of New York, named Elliot Spitzer. Forget about that. That ain't going to happen. He wants to be governor. He's establishment. He's not going to do anything. I've got Spitzer's statement. Here's his message to us on 9/11. A message from Attorney General Elliot Spitzer. Now, isn't Elliot Spitzer the lawyer attack dog rooting out corruption on Wall Street? Blah, blah. The crusading Attorney General. Here's what he says. He's got four short paragraphs. I won't burden you with all of them, but I'll just give you the first and then last, because it's all the same. On this fourth anniversary of the September 11th attacks, I join with you in solace and remembrance of this terrible tragedy. Tragedy, heartfelt, blah. Here's the last paragraph. It is in the families and loved ones who have been left behind that we find the greatest inspiration. Each and every day, their perseverance, more of the same. Right, get out your tissue. And then he says, the last sentence, on this four-year commemoration, as we continue to heal and rebuild as a state and a nation, let us recall the men and women lost and injured in the attacks and emulate those who have dedicated themselves to acts of goodwill and voluntary service. End of quote. Where's the outrage? Where's the attack on the perpetrators? Where's the crusading attorney general? You are getting nothing out of him, folks. Now, across the river, a majority of the victims of the World Trade Center lived in New Jersey. We have New York State Attorney General Peter C. Harvey, the state's first African American. He's a Columbia Law School grad, member of the New York and New Jersey bar. Any attorney general, actually, who's citizen was lost, as I understand it, can actually prosecute. We also have Robert Morgenthau, the Law and Order DA, Manhattan. He could prosecute, right? The State Attorney General of Virginia could, because of and of Pennsylvania, because of the crashes there. That ain't going to happen. This is all The fix is in. This is establishment stuff. What's the other method for this to break wide open? Mainstream media, corporate media. I think that's going to happen someday, seriously, big time. They can't seal off the truth, which is growing, our knowledge is growing daily. What criminal charges could be brought? Oh, all kinds of them, you know, from premeditated murder to treason. Treason's an interesting one. I don't think it would actually work. I mean, they are traitors, but you got to have two witnesses to the act or plot, etc. It's kind of it's rarely used in truth, even though it's a constitutional, one of the few crimes specified in the Constitution. But short of that, you got everything under the sun, including kidnapping and criminal conspiracy, arson, obstruction of justice, destruction of evidence, all kinds of felonies to bring forward. Okay. Now, what would be, I want to kind of put this in the framework of a prosecution. What would be the opening statement? It would help if I had my reading glasses. We've already established that they have motive, means, and opportunity. What we could prove is that only these elements in the U.S. government could pull this off. They would have outsiders. Outsiders would have been involved, like MI6, Britain. Some private contractors are involved. The Mossad of Israel. I can't prove that, but there's lots of fingerprints around about that. There's no other reasonable explanation for the manifest facts. Fact one is we have the day the Defense Department stood still. Sounds like an atomic 1950s movie, but the day of the defense. Then, second, we have the controlled demolitions of the WTC three buildings. There's no other way to explain why those buildings went down. Third, we have the attack, the missile attack on the Pentagon, which would a cruise missile is what they use against hardened targets, 3 foot thick walls. We have the crash in Pennsylvania, which Andreas von Bülow, the German minister, did a book on this in 2003, calls a fake. I think it was faked. What do you have on all four airplane crashes? No credible wreckage. When you look at the World Trade Center, you know what really bothers me? There's a big debate. This is a controversial area that we might get into in the Q&A period. But it really bothers me that there's no wreckage in the World Trade Center visible, but for some fake-looking parts planted by FEMA or similar. You know, they have this little piece of a fuselage which has no fire burns. It doesn't have the right color for United. And I'll bet you that the windows wouldn't be right for a 767. Then they have this other piece of engine on Church Street. An expert tells me it's from a 737. It's a 737 engine piece. And on the Pentagon lawn, they have this little scrap of Reynolds aluminum foil. It doesn't even have the right American Airlines colors, in truth. So we have no significant wreckage. My thesis is, first of all, the holes are too small for the wingspan of an intact 767 in both towers. The wingspan is 156 feet, and you have to have a clear opening to swallow. You have to fracture those steel columns, those perimeter columns, so that they are completely open to absorb. The garage door has to open. This is one way to put it. The garage door opening is too small. But here's the second thing is, when you study how strong the World Trade Center towers are, there's no way these planes could have gone in there, this aluminum plane, up against steel, and not broken something off. A tail had to break off. if only because the plane, even if it were strong enough to slice through the exterior, would have encountered the core very quickly. On the North Tower, it would have encountered the core within 60 feet. A Boeing 767, 159 feet long. Even if it went all the way to the through the core to the other side, impossible, physically impossible. There would have been 7 feet of tail sticking out. Now, it might have been exploded. I'm not saying, but the official explanation is pure hogwash in terms of the opening and in terms of the strength of the exterior. And if you look at other airplane crashes, we don't actually, there's a website called airdisaster.com. Even when planes run into whatever, they leave plenty of recognizable wreckage. They aren't vaporized. They aren't shredded and disappearing in a fire, etc. So I claim no Boeing 767, physically impossible for the 767 to have gone in to either tower. Okay, and what's the likelihood of two of them within 16 and a half minutes flying in and completely disappearing in the garage? You don't see any wreckage. If you look at the photos of the holes, there's nothing broken off to the ground in front. They're just a complete disappearance. And these planes are very large. They're wide-bodied. They're kind of light heavyweights. They're wide-bodied jets, considerably bigger than a 757. Here's another thing. I don't like anything about the official because South Tower. South Tower shows an outline of 38 degrees. Now, when you're riding in a jet liner and it's at a 38-degree angle, like so, which way are you going to be turning? Huh? Or those of you who ride a motorcycle and are leaned left, huh? You're going to be turning left. And the path of the plane, the trajectory of, remember it supposedly almost missed the South Tower? And then there's this big fireball out the east side. Well, the lean angle and the trajectory are inconsistent, but a Delta pilot, I talked to one of my friends, says a 767 can do a complete 360-degree roll. Okay? So you could be doing a roll and still be kind of turning right or going on a rightward angle. In other words, it's physically possible, but how many of you think Mohammed Atta or similar can pull this off, you know, fly the plane this way? So that one might be physically possible. I'm willing to concede that. Now, why is this controversy over the planes? Do we have phantom planes? Do we have missiles? Do we have planes with air-to-ground missiles? What's going on? In truth, it's not settled on behalf of any one of these theories, which range from mild to wild. But here's why it's important. It's not just enough, really, to have the controlled demolition affirmed, proven up beyond any reasonable doubt. Why the planes are important and the hijacking issue is... They've got to have Arab hijackers, their key pretext to launching their wars, right? And giving the American public, inducing the American public to give them the wherewithal to do so. So if you prove that Arab hijackers didn't pilot these planes as advertised, you've put another fatal wound in the official theory. Now, here's another question that comes up. The National Security Agency, NSA, and commercial satellite companies are taking photographs continuously. Where are the satellite photos of these planes going into the crashes advertised? You think you're ever going to see those? They have to fake them, because I don't believe they exist. And what about eyewitness accounts regarding the planes? You know, one of the things that strikes me is this plane, the first plane that hit the North Tower, supposedly was thundering down the island of Manhattan at 450 miles an hour, It would have taken it at that speed about a minute to go from the north end of Central Park into the North Tower. Plenty of people on those basically north-south streets, Park Avenue, Fifth Avenue, Lexington Avenue, had plenty, people in Central Park had plenty of opportunity to see this plane. Would have been unusual, you know, the thing's at 2,000 feet. It's skyscraper low. It's really hustling down. It's big. I'm going, where is all that? It might be there. I don't know. But here's a problem. There's always eyewitness accounts are always problematic, right? Because people have different recollections. Some of them are lying. It's clearly true in the Pentagon crash. Some are military people. They're clearly lying. Here's one I followed up on CNN.com. I go to, nothing adds up in this whole thing. I go to look at, there's one woman, they've got a little film clip. See, she says she took off from LaGuardia at 8:30 about on an American commuter plane to Cleveland. And we saw on this 22-seater plane, the plane going to the North Tower. Okay, so I follow up. I said, first of all, was there such a scheduled flight? I go to BTS.gov, the Bureau of Transport. There was such a flight scheduled. What aircraft was used? They give me this tail number, 711MQ. I go find plane 711MQ. It's owned by a Texas company, and it's a Gulfstream 1, you know, a 1975 plane. Has no American Eagle paint on it, etc. So I asked a buddy of mine who's an American Eagle pilot, could they have used this plane? I don't know where he got your information, but no, that's impossible. And would American Eagle schedule a plane this small, a 22-seater, from LaGuardia to Cleveland, Ohio? I'm going, it's just, and this woman is saying this. I bet you she's an actress. Am I too suspicious, huh? But that's what you get into. Nothing adds up on when you track this stuff down. It's such a complex crime. I don't care how good the criminals are. They just couldn't make it all add up. And almost nothing adds up. Even the flight 5930, Colgan Air, from Portland International down to Logan, didn't exist in the database. There was no such flight. You know, on and on. Flight 11 wasn't scheduled. Just go on and on. So eyewitnesses are problematic. Now, in Pennsylvania, I actually believe a lot of the eyewitness reports. And I want to read you a couple of these. Now, in Pennsylvania, of course, we had this jetliner disappear into a hole in a landfill. The other occasions, we had the jetliners disappear into buildings. So there's something a little different about this. Now, here's a quote from the mayor of Shanksville, a town of under 300. "There was no plane," says the mayor, Ernie Stull. Everyone was puzzled because the call had been a plane had crashed, but there was no plane. Reporter. They had been sent there because of a crash, but there was no plane? No, nothing, only this hole. Even Jerry Longman, the New York Times writer who wrote Among the Heroes about Flight 93 in Pennsylvania, said he was on the bus with the media. All they did to show them the crash site was get on the bus with other reporters, go to a knoll where you're a couple hundred feet away, and he says all we could see was a smoking hole. Now, Longman believes the official account, but I'm just saying, even there, didn't that raise any flags for you, Jerry? Okay, here's another witness, eyewitness testimony. Nina Linsbauer, who was the first to go up to the smoking crater, says, quote, "The hole was 5 to 6 feet deep and smaller than the 24-foot trailer in her front yard." She described hearing, quote, "an explosion like an atomic bomb," unquote, not a crash. Well, the number one physical impossibility about the Pennsylvania crash, and this is the crash we know least about, is that you have this primary hole with a wing imprint, but as Nina says, it's too small. A 757 has a wingspan of 115 feet. Well, it makes it look as if it's a near vertical. Remember, that was the first story about the heroic passengers were seizing control of the cockpit, and either they or in the struggle, the hijackers decided to take it down near vertical. How is that consistent? How is that consistent with debris, airplane debris, 8 miles wide? In other words, it's one or the other. Another physical problem is that the plane was going east. Remember, it turned around in Ohio, according to the official accounts, and it's going east, and the eyewitnesses say it was. Many of them say it already rolled over. It was flying low. It was having problems. Maybe it had taken a missile shot or two. And then there's this huge, this vertical hole. It's right on the edge of the woods. So how is it, if it's going low, how is it going to do this vertical deal, right? If it's low, it's going to do this more or less horizontal type crash. So the physical problems here with the evidence don't support the official theory. Okay, I feel we're getting close to Q&A and the best part. But let me see if I want to give you anything more to chew on here in the form of a summing up. Okay, there are a couple other things I want to touch on that you might want to bring up. What about all these intelligence failures pre-9/11? What is that about? Well, that's about your patsies. Remember Lee Harvey Oswald? I'm just a patsy. That's right. You're just the fake killer, right? That's what the Arab hijackers too are. Whether there were planes or not, whether they had hijacked them, all of which I doubt, but nonetheless. These are guys, you need a story after the event. You need patsies with some fingerprints on it. And the trouble with patsies is that they're incapable of committing the crimes they're accused of, right? These losers are just no way competent to pull any of this off, not least of which would be to have the Defense Department stand still. And they're always conducting these war games exercises, just like the London bombing, you know, has this convenient war exercise thing. That's part one of the reasons they do that is so you can shut it down, have a plausible, if something goes wrong and you want to interrupt the crime. So the patsies, they are out there in the field. They can't manage day-to-day living in a normal way, right? So they're tripping all these wires. They trip them up in Phoenix, in Chicago, San Diego, Miami. And guess what? The well-named Marion Spike Bowman, what do they do at FBI headquarters? Right? Spike it. Right? Thwart the field agents who are not witting participants, but rather patriotic Americans, believing they're doing their duty on behalf of conventional law enforcement. So that's the whole pre-9/11 intelligence failures. That's how we must explain it. Basically, it's not a Lee-Hop problem. Let it happen on purpose. It's a Mee-Hop problem. Okay, now let me end with a close. In a real prosecution, as Vincent Bugliosi, the brilliant former L.A. prosecutor, points out, the summation is really everything because you start with the end and show how the crime was committed and by whom beyond a reasonable doubt. So you work backward from the summation. And you've got to be simple and clear, which I may not have always been. But I'm not Vince Bugliosi either, about the evidence of guilt. And it then becomes clear and obvious the verdict, the duty that the jurors must perform. you show the evidence in a natural, logical way, and there's no other reasonable explanation but that the accused is guilty as advertised. And I thank you for your attention, and let's get on with some question and slippery answers or clear, solid answers. Thank you.